From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, after a horrific limousine crash kills 20 people in Schoharie, Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik says Congress should act to tighten regulations on the vehicles. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts about the Republican in the race for state attorney general. And a newly released study looks at the risks of oil spills in the Hudson River. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. A prosecutor says the New York limousine company operator charged with criminally negligent homicide in a crash that killed 20 people had packed bags with him when he was arrested. Nauman Hussein showed little emotion this week as he was arraigned and didn't comment as he left court after posting $150,000 bond. A judge entered a not guilty plea for him. His lawyer says Hussein didn't feel safe staying at home because he got threats after Saturday's crash in Schoharie. Meanwhile, several of the victims of the Schoharie limousine crash that killed 20 people have ties to New York Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik's 21st District. During a visit to Plattsburgh this week, Stefanik spoke with the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley about the accident and other national issues and said she believes Congress should act to tighten regulation on the vehicles.
And I think we should do so on a bipartisan basis. I worked with Senator Schumer to make sure that the National Transportation Surface Board is able to get all information they need so we can ensure this tragedy never happens again. The fact that this we've had such an extraordinary loss of life is just unimaginable, being a part of the family with the four sisters. And obviously this community in my district has been touched because they grew up here or attended college here, and one of the couples lived in Watertown. So yes, Congress should act and take a good look at this. And there are a lot of questions that need to be answered. Why was a vehicle on the road that failed inspection? Why was the driver allowed to drive that vehicle that he didn't have the appropriate license for?
How much of this can the federal government and Congress actually make rules for when a lot of it is also state rules?
I think you have to work with the state, and I think Governor Cuomo is obviously paying very close attention to this, as are the local electeds. This is an area where we will come together and make sure that our standards are updated so that this tragedy never happens again.
The Kavanaugh confirmation, I know that's a Senate-led issue, but what do you make of the process, and do you think it will affect voter turnout this fall, whether it's independent, Republican, Democratic, etc.?
I think the process was broken. I think the process was broken from start to finish. I was deeply concerned that Senator Feinstein didn't turn over information to the bipartisan investigators as part of the initial investigation that the Senate Judiciary undertook. I was pleased that they had an additional FBI investigation after Dr. Ford's testimony. I think it's important that senators be given access to all of that information. And I respect the Senate's advice and consent. And while I'm not privy to that FBI investigation, I respect how the senators cast their vote. And I think we need to make reforms moving forward that require senators, if you have information that is integral to a Supreme Court justice nomination, you need to turn that over to the Senate Judiciary Committee, and it shouldn't be leaked in the press. I do think this will have an impact on voter turnout, because as I was going door to door, actually right in Plattsburgh, as this was very much in the media, it really was amazing to me as I was opening the doors how many people were watching this incredibly closely and were very frustrated with the process and with the politicization.
We are talking on Tuesday, and UN Ambassador Nikki Haley has just announced her resignation, effective at the end of the year. What's your reaction? Do you know her at all?
I do know Ambassador Haley. Ambassador Haley, I've met many times. She was a very strong governor, and I think in terms of her policies at the UN, she was a strong advocate for American leadership, for countering Russia, but I'll be following the news reports as you will.
Republican Elise Stefanik was first elected to the House in 2014. She is being challenged by Democrat Tedra Cobb and Green Party candidate Lynn Kahn in November.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Meanwhile, many of the victims killed in Saturday's limo crash in Schoharie had close ties to Amsterdam, New York, about 25 miles away. The city came together this week for a candlelight vigil and memorial service honoring the 20 people killed. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound.
A crowd filled the walkway of the Mohawk Valley Gateway Overlook Bridge, there to honor the crash victims, many of whom called Amsterdam home. They heard words of scripture from the Reverend Kent McHurd.
We're gathered here today to mourn the tragic death so early and so too soon, 20 individuals over in Schoharie. For family members that are here and loved ones, please know as a community our prayers are with you throughout this journey and throughout this time.
They listened to remarks, words of sorrow and encouragement from speakers like Congressman Paul Tonko.
Amsterdam is my home and hometown. I've always known it to be a loving community. As I gather with you this evening, I see it manifested in a very powerful expression. Look at the bridge, filled with people. The walkways filled with people. To the family members, know your loved ones are loved by their community. We are crushed with you. We are crushed for you.
State Assemblyman Angelo Santa Barbara also represents the area.
What makes Amsterdam so special is that our community does come together, and we see it here tonight once again. My thoughts, my prayers, my deepest sympathies are with the families here tonight, and with this entire community as we come together to support one another.
State Senator George Amador.
That void that is in your heart right now will be filled. Your strength will be renewed, and that peace will come back at some point.
Greater Amsterdam School District Superintendent Dr. Vicky Ramos.
These are not the circumstances under which I wish we were here tonight. My heart breaks as I think of all the lives that were never will be the same. It gives me hope to see us all here with strength and selflessness, as we all know that words will never, ever fill the void in the hearts.
Everyone stood, innumerable candles raised in a moment of silence for the victims. Relatives of the dead cried. Again, Reverend McHurd.
And yet those words that says, even though I walk through the valley in the shadow of death, that's where we are now. And as a community, we are remaining in. But our community of faith tells us that God is with us, and God will restore our souls.
The tribute ended with family and friends lining up to sign and leave messages on a large Amsterdam Strong memorial banner hanging on the Mohawk Valley Gateway Overlook Bridge.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan.
The 20 lives that were lost in the limousine crash in Schoharie, New York, have been listed by police. It's enough to take the wind right out of you, including four sisters from one family and newlyweds on the way to celebrate a 30th birthday party. Then a side article on the limo owner, and we find out now an FBI informant, a recruiter of terrorists, and a fraudster, as the Times says. The man had spent better part of two decades crossing back and forth from one side of the law to the other and clearly allowed to run shoddy businesses.
Well, you know, I am worried about this. I know that quite frequently when people make deals with the FBI to turn on others and colleagues and friends, they get protected in some ways, and it is not a good thing. So we'll have to keep a very sharp eye to make sure that this guy gets what he's entitled to, but not one bit more. We're told about the governor talked about that his license doesn't cover what he was doing, driving what is basically a bus, and that the car itself had not passed inspection. That's not good. And I can only tell you, I don't know any of the people who died, but I do know that I have not been right in the head since this thing happened, because all of us are mourning and all of us realize that it could have happened to us or anybody we know.
Alan, an interesting conversation this week with the candidate for state attorney general, the Republican, that is. His name is Keith Woolford, and he is an African-American. He is a lawyer. He's currently in New York City, but he's from Buffalo, from Western New York. He had quite a conversation about what he would bring to the position, including independence, attack on corruption, dealing with the environment and the climate, and as well as his thoughts on legalizing recreational use of marijuana.
Well, look, first of all, he is against the recreational use of marijuana. He says we don't know enough yet. This is an unpopular position for a politician to be taking. It should be noted. Now, let me just say, of all the Republicans who are running this year, it's not a Republican year. He's coming the closest, but he's still 12-something points behind in the polls, Tish James, who is the handpicked candidate of Andrew Cuomo. Look, he makes one very good point. I think it's going to be very difficult for him to win, by the way. He's a self-made man. He's done extremely well in life, a major player in a major law firm in New York. He's got lots of money that he's made, but he wants to do it because he says it's the right thing to do. He makes a single point. Andrew Cuomo, let's face it, whether it's his fault or not, has been surrounded by slime and corruption. And do we need somebody who Cuomo picked to be the person who is examining the legality of what he does? You know, you need an attorney general who will be tough and who will not owe anything to this governor. And that's why it seems to me that he is making a good argument for why he should be elected. Will he? Probably not. But it's a good argument.
Alan, since we last spoke, the governor was hemming and hawing about accepting the Working Families Party line. Of course, he did accept that line. Your thoughts on all those machinations?
Well, you know, David, there's some interesting analysis of this election. There are about four minor party candidates. If you add them all up, the minor party candidates, the Green, Howie Hawkins, we've interviewed all of them, what you find is a number that is commensurate to the governor's polling numbers. However, you know, if it's in five places, it doesn't help. But the fact is that this is going to be an election because a lot of people are going to hold their noses, we know that, and vote for certain candidates. The governor clearly is like 2-1 ahead. He'll win. But it is an interesting election. And if I'm Cuomo, I'm very concerned about the minor parties. Take a look at the Working Families Party. They don't like them. And they did this ridiculous arrangement to kick Cynthia Nixon off the ballot. That was terrible. The rank and file of the Working Families Party are progressive. They don't want Andrew Cuomo. They had to give it to him, and he played hard to get. Well, maybe I won't take it. Well, of course he took it because he had to take it. And he's angry at them because they didn't give it to him in the first place. I'm just telling you now, that Cuomo will win, but there is still going to be an awful lot of people looking at everything in that administration. Because when you take a look at some of the people who are going to jail right now and why they're going to jail, it leaves a lot of unanswered questions.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
Candidates for statewide office were required this week to disclose how much money they have on hand for the final month of the 2018 election season. Once again, Governor Andrew Cuomo, who is seeking a third term, is far ahead of his challengers. We get the latest numbers from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Cuomo has over $9 million still available to spend on broadcast television ads, social media hits, and get out the vote efforts. And he's been spending liberally so far in the general election on spots that highlight his opposition to President Trump.
New York will be the lead to the resistance. We are going to fight back. We are going to say to this president, we are better as a people.
A large financial advantage helped Cuomo in the September Democratic primary, where he was challenged by actor Cynthia Nixon. Cuomo began the primary season with over $25 million, and he spent up to $500,000 a day in August and early September on ads on television and social media. Cuomo won by a 2-to-1 margin. The governor's nearest challenger in the general election, Republican Mark Molinaro, has just over $200,000 left in the final weeks of the campaign. Steve Greenberg, political analyst and spokesman for Siena College Polls, says that's a real disadvantage for the GOP candidate. Greenberg says having money still matters.
He has no money. 56% of voters right now, 5 weeks before Election Day, 56% of voters either don't know Mark Molinaro at all or don't know enough about him to have an opinion. It takes money. It takes money to get known to New York electorate. We are a big state with many media markets, including the most expensive media market in the nation.
At the same point in the 2014 race for governor, the Republicans' candidate for governor, Rob Astorino, had $1 million more than Molinaro does now. Molinaro's campaign says his fundraising has been hampered because Cuomo is threatening potential donors to keep their wallets closed. They offer no proof of their allegations. Cuomo's campaign denies that. Campaign communications director Danny Lieber says Molinaro is just having another bad day. She calls the charges pathetic and desperate. Large amounts of campaign cash can bring its own troubles, though. There can be an appearance of pay-to-play politics when companies give large amounts to an elected official and receive government grants or lucrative contracts. Cuomo's own administration has been rocked by corruption scandals involving large campaign donations from companies and the awarding of economic development grants. His former closest aide faces prison time for bribery, while other former associates were convicted of bid-rigging government contracts for favored donors. GOP candidate Molinaro, despite his more limited resources, has produced his own ads highlighting the corruption scandals.
Andrew Cuomo's top advisors are going to jail for stealing your tax dollars. Guilty, guilty, guilty.
But because of money constraints, the ad has a limited reach. The other candidates in the race have also not raised a lot of cash. Independent candidate for governor Stephanie Miner has just $55,000 in her account. The Green Party's candidate Howie Hawkins has just over $31,000, and Libertarian candidate Larry Sharp has $24,000. They are relying on news conferences, media interviews, and mentions on social media to get their message out. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. An environmental group in the Hudson Valley has released a study on the risks of oil spills in the Hudson River. Scenic Hudson commissioned the study that looks at threats at 9 locations between Yonkers and Albany. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
Haley Carlock is Scenic Hudson Environmental Advocacy Director.
There's never been a comprehensive study of the risk and consequences of an oil spill in the Hudson River, which when we discovered this was sort of shocking to us. It's been done for a lot of water bodies, you know, all around the United States and around the world.
Scenic Hudson had commissioned the report from Environmental Research Consulting, while a U.S. Coast Guard proposal to establish up to 10 anchorage sites from Yonkers to Kingston was on the table. That proposal was shelved in June 2017. Since the Coast Guard directed a study on safety along the river, and there is a Hudson River Safety Committee that met most recently October 2nd in Hyde Park, Carlock participated.
One, I am hopeful. And listening to Captain Thomas' words from the Coast Guard at the Tuesday meeting, that there will be no new anchorage proposals in the Hudson River, you know, anytime in the near future. That's what he said on Tuesday, and you know, I believe him. So I'm hopeful that's not going to happen. But if some proposal like that does occur, or a proposal for a new oil terminal or a different type of oil to be transported on the Hudson River, that this document and the information in it will be the first place that people go to say, wait a minute, let's look at what the consequences can be. Let's look at how this should influence our planning and whether we would allow this type of thing to happen at all on the Hudson River.
Scenic Hudson study suggests that the Coast Guard designate the Hudson River a high-volume port area, which would require enhanced spill preparedness and reduced response time. A spokeswoman says the U.S. Coast Guard is aware of the study and looks forward to reviewing it. Carlock says the study evaluated 77 scenarios at 12 locations.
What was most shocking to us was looking at how long oil would remain in the water for some of the scenarios, obviously those that have a larger volume of oil, you know, over 28 days in some cases. And in some of the scenarios, you would have oil at different times. You know, you'd have a scenario that would occur perhaps at the Port of Albany or maybe in Coxsackie, so in the upper Hudson River area. And during certain weather conditions for certain types of oil, that oil from that spill would make its way all the way down to New York Harbor.
The analysis included worst-case scenarios in four locations, Albany, Kingston, Newburgh, and Yonkers.
We looked at a scenario where there was an explosion and fire resulting from a spill of Bakken crude at the Port of Albany, where Bakken would be coming out of a tank into a barge, and there was an explosion, which is actually modeled on an actual incident that occurred, not in New York State. I think it was out in Michigan. And that you would have severe damage for, you'd have an explosion zone that would go, you know, over 5 miles. You would have potentially areas that are, you know, heavily residential near the Port of Albany that could be impacted by that. So there you're not looking at the ecology of the river as much, because if there's an explosion and fire, less oil is going to get into the river. But, you know, severe human health, safety, and casualty concerns, obviously.
At the site of a formerly proposed Kingston anchorage, the scenario is a 150,000-barrel home heating oil spill. On the Newburgh waterfront, the study examines an 11,000-barrel Bakken crude spill from a train accident, and for Yonkers, a 155,000-barrel gasoline spill was analyzed.
Fast response is critical to protect the river.
That's John Lipscomb. He's riverkeeper boat captain and vice president for advocacy, and says the total volume of petroleum moving along the river has increased, yet the capacity to respond to a spill is limited with dated technology. Lipscomb says he hopes the report helps to change this.
The discussion over spill response and recovery is much needed in the Hudson Valley. Aside from the Anchorage debate, there's petroleum moving on the river every day. Refined product is coming up from the coastal refineries to terminals in various communities and in Albany. And then in the last few years, as everyone knows now, we see Bakken crude oil coming from North Dakota by rail to Albany and being transported south to the coastal refineries.
On October 16th and 17th, Scenic Hudson will conduct in-depth workshops for experts about the study at the Empire State Plaza in Albany. Carlock says Coast Guard representatives plan to attend, and Scenic Hudson plans to hold a separate session over the winter for the general public. A link to the study is at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1841. Or just stream or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org.